Billy Graham, the American preacher and evangelist, said that once he was speaking at a meeting, and he was talking about the fact that we all make mistakes. No one is perfect. And he said a rather nervous, kind of weedy looking man at the back of the church put his hand up and it was shaking. And Billy Graham said to him, what's the problem? And the man said, I know someone who's perfect. Billy Graham was flabbergasted. You do? Yes, said the man, my wife's first husband. Someone has said, a dentist's mistake is pulled. A lawyer's mistake is imprisoned. A teacher's mistake is failed. A printer's mistake is corrected. A pharmacist's mistake is buried. A postman's mistake is forwarded. And an electrician's mistake is shocking. Well, Romans chapter 10 is all about mistakes. There are four mistakes that the nation, the children of Israel, the Jewish people made in trying to get right with God. And the Apostle Paul takes them through those four mistakes and shows them the solution, the answer, what is needed. So let's look at them one by one. The first mistake was this. They had a wrong kind of zeal. A wrong kind of zeal. He writes in verse 1, brothers and sisters, my heart's desire and prayer for God, for the Israelites, the Jewish people, is that they may be saved. For I can testify about them that they are zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge. Several years ago, there was a conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra. His name was Eugene Ormandy. Eugene Ormandy. Such was his zeal and enthusiasm when he conducted that orchestra that on one occasion he actually dislocated his shoulder. Now that's enthusiasm, folks. That's zeal. And some folks have it, and sadly some folks don't. At the entrance of a factory hangs a sign, and it says this: if you are like a wheelbarrow, going no further than you are pushed, you need not apply to work here. Sadly in life, and sadly in many churches, there are too many people like wheelbarrows. They go no further than they are pushed. Too many lack enthusiasm for life and for the things of God. That was not the problem with the Jewish people. They loved their Jewishness. They loved their religion. They had a zeal. They had a passion. But sadly, said the Apostle Paul, it was misplaced. He knew from personal experience what it was to have your enthusiasm, your passion in the wrong source. When he gave his testimony, for example, in the book of Philippians in chapter 3, he gives his story. He describes his background. He says, look, you know my pedigree. If you examine me, I was kosher. If I was a sticker rock, wherever you broke me, it just read pure Jew, all the way through. A legitimate birth, circumcised on the eighth day. An Israelite from the tribe of Benjamin. A strict and devout adherent to God's law. A fiery defender of the purity of my religion. Even to the point of persecuting the church. A meticulous observer of everything set down in God's law. Paul says, when you looked at my life, you couldn't get a better Jew than I was. He was a Pharisee. He was deeply religious. That meant he fasted every week. He tithed, he gave a percentage of his money. Three times a day he would stop and he would pray. Wherever he was, street corner or synagogue, it didn't matter. Prayer was a priority to him. He was as religious as a man could be. He sought to live his life by following at least 600 commandments, as revealed in the Old Testament. He said, I had religion and I had it big time. But actually it was all misplaced. If you think of a ladder against the wall, he said, I got to the top of the ladder only to realise it was leaning against the wrong wall. It was all the wall of self-effort and pride. Was Saul religious? Well, that's like saying, is the Pope a Catholic? Do ISIS follow Islam? Of course they do. Of course he is. You won't get anyone more religious than Paul. But one day he realised he was wrong. He was storming into Damascus. He'd got a group of armed people with him. They were going to take that city by storm. They were going to arrest Christians, and it didn't matter who, both men and women were told. He had the letters of authority. And on that road to Damascus, a blinding light. I love how he described it. It was midday, but he says it was brighter than the noonday sun. And he heard a voice. And the voice said, "Saul, Saul." That was his pre-converted name. "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Who are you?" And words that must have sent shivers down his spine. "I am Jesus. The very one you're trying to eradicate." And Saul realised all his dominoes collapsed. He'd got religion, but he was wrong. He was wrong. God wanted more than religion. It affects the heart, and his heart wasn't right. So just being zealous wasn't good enough. Secondly, they had a wrong way of thinking. Verse 2 and 3. "For I can testify about them that they are zealous for God, but their zeal is not based on knowledge. Since they did not know the righteousness of God and sought to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness." I like the story of the lady who came down the stairs with a huge smile on her face. Husband was a typical potato couch, sitting in the armchair watching the football, drink in hand. And she came bounding in. He said, "Darling, darling, you're not going to believe it." "What?" He said, "Look." And she did a little twirl. She said, "I can finally get into these jeans after all those years." Husband didn't quite know what to say. But in the end, he had to tell the truth. He said, "Darling," he said, "they are my jeans." She had the enthusiasm, but sadly, it was misplaced. None of us like to get it wrong, and none of us like to admit we are wrong. Especially fellas. Anyone ever told you you're going the wrong way when you're driving? You just don't like it, do you? As my kids know, we never go the wrong way, we just go the scenic route. Or daddy's shortcut. The Apostle Paul in these verses says, hey, the Jewish people got it wrong. The reason is they chose wrongly. Look at verse 3. They sought to establish their own. They did not submit to God's righteousness. The word righteousness, if you want to know what it means, cut it in half. Things that are right. Right way to live, a righteous way. Right way to know God, righteousness with God. Just cut it in half. Righteousness just means being right. Being right with God and living a life that is right. And the problem for the Jewish people is they became proud of their own good works. Proud of their own self-righteousness. And it blinded them to their needs. They assumed as long as they went to the right temple or synagogue, as long as they made the right offerings, as long as they said the right prayers, that was enough. But just going through the rituals, if the heart's not there, are empty. Are empty. And at the time of Jesus, he said that. He said, "You're like a whitewashed tomb to the religious leaders. On the outside, you're clean, pure, perfect. But on the inside, you're full of corruption, dead men's bones. There's no reality there. It's just outward ceremonies. There's no inward reality." But because they got their ceremonies down to a T, it made them proud. It made them proud. I want to just show you a little video clip of a man's testimony on that idea. I am proud.
I am perfect. I know I am. I am perfect. Because I give and give of myself. Because I love without ceasing. Because I am talented at everything. Because I am good beyond all reason. Because I am humble. Yes, very humble. Because when you look up perfect in the dictionary, you find a picture of me. And only a picture, because words can't even describe. And even a picture tries hard, but can never come close to the sheer majesty that I am. Ask me the problem, and I will figure it out. But don't beg to differ, because you probably should figure that because I'm the best, my way is the best possible way. I am structured to perform, my body carved, my abs of steel, and quite a good-looking face, if I do say so myself. I don't drink or smoke. I don't choose to blemish this perfectly formed body with an imperfect substance. I don't submit to peer pressure either. I mean, what would be the point of listening to imperfect people? I don't hit back, I turn the other cheek. I don't steal, lie, or get jealous. I mean, what would I be jealous of? I am perfect. I don't judge, I know everyone's already below me. And I don't rely on friends or family, for they aren't perfect, and they always let me down. But I am perfect. Or am I? You see, I give because it makes you look good. And of course I love, but I love myself most of all. And I've been given talent, but I only use that talent to raise myself higher. And I'm a good person, because I was told being a good person makes you more likable. And yes, I act humble, but it's just a show for others to see. I lie, I steal, I hit back, and I get jealous, especially of people that know where they're going in life. For it's clear that I'm not perfect. Rather, when you look up imperfect in the dictionary, you see a scratch where I tried to cover up the letters to my name. But here lies my problem. For so long, I've tried to be perfect, thinking that the big man upstairs outtaught me something for my great life. But this is not the case. For it is when I think I am perfect, it is when I think I deserve something, that my pride destroys my ability to be without sin. So if the only way to being perfect makes me worship myself, then where does that leave me? It leaves me with the ability to do nothing, absolutely nothing, and let grace do everything. All the things that I ever do mean nothing and do nothing. For the more I try, the more I raise myself and lower God. But the Father has given me a grace that abounds my selfish pride. So it's when He takes over. It's when I lower myself and raise Him. It's when I do absolutely nothing. It's when I'm wrapped in His grace, allowing Him to do everything, that the I am makes me perfect.
Can't help thinking, very much like the Apostle Paul, before he was converted, hey, I'm perfect compared to you lot, you Gentiles. I keep all the laws. I'm good enough for God. But when he met the risen Christ, he realized he was far from perfect. And actually, it wasn't his self-effort. It was all of God's grace. But it's hard to admit we're wrong. Did you know a well-known company launched an instant cake mix? And their selling point was this: you just add water. And it failed. Failed miserably. And because they'd invested millions of pounds into this, they did surveys. Why won't people buy this instant cake mix? All you've got to do is add water. And the feedback they got was this: people don't trust it because it's too simple. Too simple. So they changed their packaging. And it now reads, just add water and an egg. And people buy it. People buy it. Because before it was too easy. What, just add water? No, there's a catch. It's not going to be good. But as soon as you could do something to it, people partook of it. So many people are like that when it comes to God. Believe? It's a gift, it's a grace, it's too simple. What must I do? And so people want to do penance. They want to do all kinds of things to add to what God has done for us. The Bible makes it clear, it's by grace we've been saved through faith, not of ourselves, so that no one can boast. So they were wrong, the wrong kind of thinking. They thought simply their outward acts, their ceremonies would make them right with God. But their hearts were missing. The third mistake was this: a wrong understanding of the law, the Old Testament law. Christ, verse 4 says, is the culmination of the law, so that there may be righteousness for everyone who believes. You see, the law is the light that reveals how dirty the room is. It is not the broom that sweeps it clean. Let me say that again. The law is the light that reveals how dirty the room is. It is not the broom that sweeps it clean. When you look at the law, it doesn't clean up your life. It just shows you how wrong you've done. That we do steal, we do lie, we do lust, we do not put God first. It shows us we fail. The law condemns. It dooms. It condemns us. And Moses says there, or Paul quotes Moses, Leviticus 8 verse 5. He said, if you keep the perfect law, you'll be right. But none of us keep the law. And the law of God is a bit like a pearl necklace. Doesn't matter where you break it, the whole lot goes. So the answer is not in the law, because the law condemns. But verse 4 says, Christ came the perfect man. He perfectly lived according to the law. He didn't lie. He didn't lust. He didn't steal. He always did those things that pleased the Father. He put God first. He didn't blaspheme. He kept time to go. Whatever commandment you look at, Jesus fulfilled it. He kept it. He fulfilled the law. And when he died upon a cross, Christians believe a transaction took place. So that those who are imperfect can take on board his perfection. And he who was perfect took the punishment and the blame for our imperfections. The just for the unjust. The righteous for the unrighteous. And so you and I are made right with God, not because we've kept the law, because we haven't. But because of his righteousness. His righteousness. What the law could never do, make us right with God, Christ has done through his death on a cross. There's a story told of a Native American. And this chief was being interviewed. And the interviewer said, look, why have you abandoned? Why have you swapped? Why have you given up your old time religion for Christianity? This is your heritage and you've swapped it for Christianity. Why? And the Indian chief didn't say anything. He just pulled up some dry grass and he put it in a circle. He took some twigs and he broke them up and he put them on top of the grass in a circle. He then looked around and he found a caterpillar. He stuck out his finger, picked up the caterpillar and he put it in the middle of the circle. He then got two stones and hit them together. And the circle with the dry grass and the stick suddenly caught fire. And the caterpillar was in the middle. And as it tried to escape, of course, whichever side of the circle, circles don't have sides, do they? But you know what I mean. Whichever part of the circumference of the circle it went, it had to back away. It couldn't escape. It kind of looked up as if to say, help me. And at that moment, the Indian chief reached down and put his finger in. And the caterpillar crawled onto his finger. And he just lifted it out and put it outside the fire. He looked at the man who was interviewing him and he said this. Why have I swapped my old religion for Christianity? Because that's what God has done for me. In the person of Jesus Christ, he has reached down and lifted me and rescued me from the judgment, from the wrath to come. A wrong understanding of the law. And then lastly, there is a right belief in Jesus. And that's our key verse. If you declare with your mouth, Jesus is Lord, believe in your heart, God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. Did you notice he says three things? First of all, a person must say, Jesus is Lord. Now you say, well, that's easy. Anyone can stand up and say, Jesus is Lord. It doesn't mean that, of course. In modern day Britain, we miss the potency, we miss the force behind those words. What book of the Bible are we reading from? The book of Romans. It was written to people in Rome. People who were ruled by Caesar. And in early Christian history, you only ever said, Caesar is Lord. If you declared anyone above Caesar as Lord, then at the very least, you would be persecuted along with your family. And at worst, imprisoned. Or killed. To say Jesus is Lord was an act of treason. You are saying above Caesar, God on earth, in that culture, there is one greater. You know, years ago we went to Italy, not as a family, I was there with some friends, and I went to the Colosseum, and we had a tour around the Colosseum in Rome. And the lady spoke of its glories and its wonders, and it was brilliant. And my friend turned to me and said, did you notice something? I said, what? Not once in the whole tour has she ever mentioned that thousands of our brothers and sisters, Christians, were butchered and martyred in that very arena. Do you know why? Because they said, Jesus is Lord. And they wouldn't back down. And how ironic and how shameful that in Iraq today, in Libya today, people are being beheaded by ISIS for the very same reason. They will not deny their faith. They are declaring Jesus is Lord. So Paul says, you want to be saved? Your trust in Jesus, your appreciation of him, must be more than even your life itself. Secondly, a person must believe he rose from the dead. We've looked at this. At the heart of the Christian message is the resurrection. We don't believe in a historical figure alone. We're not just here to talk about the memory of Jesus. You know, sometimes see people with denim jackets or t-shirts and they have on it, Elvis lives. Well, the memory of Elvis, the music of Elvis lives, but that's not what we mean when we say Jesus lives. We're not an appreciation society to look back and discuss the works of some famous person. We believe that Jesus Christ died and rose again and lives in heaven today. He ascended after 40 days. And we can discover him and know him in our lives today. And then third and finally, he says, you must believe in your heart. You must believe that he rose from the dead. And you must confess with your lips if you declare with your mouth. Christianity requires a witness before others. I've knocked on people's doors and said, just from so-and-so church, just wanted to give you an invite along. And people have said to me, never talk about religion or politics, clear off. Some folks say that, you know, it's a very private thing. And in one sense it is. But following Jesus cannot be private and secret. It requires a confession. A confession. It's interesting as we start a brand new football season. Already, people are turning up in brand new football kits of their team. Do you know what? They are proud to be associated with a football team. They are proud to wear their colours. And yet when that person gets ill, the football club won't come and visit them. When that person gets ill, or that person has problems, they're not going to send the managing director or even a trainee to come and give you any advice or comfort. Because let's be honest, I'm a big football fan. I've got my tickets for the first game. All they want is our money. And yet we give unstinted loyalty to them. And people wear a football sheet. They're proud to be known as a certain fan. Why is it that people are ashamed or embarrassed to be known as a follower of Jesus? The one who loved us. The one who gave his life for us. Paul says, hey, you want assurance? Believe in your heart. Put your faith in the risen Christ. Confess him to other people. And that assurance will come. Let's pray.